see it going hand in hand with delivering financial services, because what happens is people put money on deposit with Postbank, and then 2 days later they take it out and go put it with another bank to service a very expensive loan. So if we could keep that in the same house, that becomes a useful thing. We didn't achieve all of the targets, any of the targets, and part of that is, I'm afraid, a timing difference. This relates to the quarter 30 June, by which time we had not received the money. So we only got our money in July, so we couldn't pay creditors, we couldn't settle labor, we couldn't do anything. You talked about a timing difference in what we said. So this first quarter was the subject of not having got the money yet, so we weren't able to do anything. Having said that, the second quarter is not better. The second quarter still shows a decline in revenues and still has a lack of confidence. I'll come back to some of the points later. The non-payment of suppliers was quite simply we didn't have the money. You know, I joined the post office on the 15th of January at 8 a.m. At 3 a.m. I delivered a letter to Treasury on the same day saying I needed the following money urgently in order for this thing to stay operationally alive. I went to see Treasury on the Tuesday of the first. The third day I was there, and I got two answers. They said to me, "Mark, we don't believe anything the post office says, and we've got no money." So that was where it started. And I think we've changed some of that now. But the reason that suppliers weren't paid, we had no money. We had literally no money. And you talk about toilet, there was no toilet paper in the head office when I arrived there. And the resilience of the people in the post office was brought to bear. People brought their own paper. Not just toilet paper. If they had a husband or a wife that worked at Old Mutual, they'd bring some paper home so that we could print like that. People have, no, I'm not joking. People have come to the party and we've assured them. The internal report audit, the internal audit has got some way to go. I think Claude is here with us in getting to work better with AG and in getting management to respond to their requests. You know, the internal audit gets ignored, you know, in my experience. And the business units have not been taken seriously, internal audit requirements. We don't permit that anymore. So expect something better. Acting CFO, I don't know if I should ask you to talk about the finance management forum, but we can come back to that if you will. Okay. We did see an exit of some critical skills. In finance in particular, you've got to have a conducive environment for people to work, otherwise the best people will go. I mean, the world is like that, so it's up to us. Of course, we've got to know the standard. I discovered, you know, interestingly enough, again, I was at a dinner somewhere with an industrial engineer, and he pointed out to me successes he's had in the steel industry, which is also a very difficult industry. And it's amazing the amount of advice I get from people. People want the post office back. They just do. And he was saying to me, "Mark, have you thought of this and have you thought of that?" And I said, "Well, what are you?" He said, "I'm an industrial engineer." I went back to the office and I said, "Have we got any industrial engineers here?" And we have. We just don't know what they're doing. So I'll go and find them now. And we will bring them onto the floor and we'll walk around. I'm going to do that tomorrow morning at our international sorting center. So we will know the standards. We've got to know the standards. The unsigned performance contracts, that's history. And you're right. Without the signed performance contracts, you don't have the ability to judge people. You know, so you don't have a benchmark against which to do something within the Labour Relations Act, and so we understand that. I can tell you what the delay was a bit. I'm not looking for an excuse, but only to say this. First of all, I wanted to understand better what they meant. They are still flawed. And they're flawed in this respect, and it goes back to being in a competitive environment. Our performance contracts punish you, but they never reward you. Okay, so you can get into trouble, but you can never get a present. Okay, now that is not a balanced scorecard. It doesn't work. Okay, so if the only thing you can do is be wrong, then you haven't got the right answer. Now, I know we're not a private sector place that pays bonuses, but you've got to be able to say to someone, "What if I get it right?" You know, you get naught for getting it right, and you get lashes for getting it wrong. Okay, and so what that does is it creates an upward delegation process. So the consequence of our performance management contracts is that people have delegated all decisions upwards and refused to take responsibility for anything because they don't want to be into trouble. When an upward delegation ethos meets a hierarchical command center, they've destroy each other in the middle, and nothing gets done. So I've been delaying the performance contracts to get a better understanding, and there's still work to be done on getting them right, but they will be signed as a matter of compliance. The date for the organogram, if I might ask my colleague Dawn to help, I think we were going to submit it in mid-November, is our report. Dawn, yes, it's not the head of HR. It still has to be approved by HR, but I think it's like a November timetable on that. And the date for the regular expenditure, I'm going to ask you to answer that as well, if you don't mind. What are the constraints? It's a difficult subject to address. The PFMA is a restraint. I'm not suggesting we excuse from the PFMA. It's got very valid roles to play in our world. But there are areas where we are in a seriously competitive space. DHL takes 6 minutes to make a decision. We take 6 months and we publish it in advance. That's not how you work. It's like, you know, it's like playing a game of cards, but we put our cards on the table first and then we bet. So we've got some major challenges around PFMA compliance, about timetables of tenders and so on, as we get into those areas which are not traditional mail. You know, and you know, I don't know how we're going to address that, but we simply, the way we are trying to address it now, take DHL as an example. You know, I've been to see them. They don't actually want to do our business. That's the truth. They are forced. They have been forced in order to comply with their contracts with their clients to become a post office. They don't want to be a post office. So the real answer for us is to become a post office again that functions. And DHL will give us the goods to deliver for the last mile. That's where the real answer lies. But it is restrained. I mean, we when I arrived there, there were more, I'm not saying this is technically correct, but there were more irregular contracts than there were regular. I mean, it was just a mountain that was almost too big. We walked out, I don't know if you understand, of it constantly, your lust. You know, when you get up in the morning, you've got this bag which you have to carry. We have to empty the bag, otherwise you can't walk fast enough to compete. So we have got some things, and also irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, all gets described as the same thing, but it's not all the same thing. There are things that in private sector would not be regarded as irregular at all, where you make a quick decision, change a contract, redo something, because it's expedient to be able to compete. Those things you ask what impede us, those things do impede us. You talk about other services. Now we can't stop thinking about the services that we could provide. They range from, you know, UNICEF delivers their textbooks to prep stores like in Nehemiah. We don't want to see that happen. Gauteng government's talking to Dischem about the distribution of chronic medicine. We're saying, no, we family, come on, yeah, talk to us about it, okay? And so then we go see the Department of Health. We used to have 66% of the Department of Health because we've got 1%. So they said, talk to us, tell us. Yeah. And so we're starting to talk to them. But we need government to say, hey, that's your sister out there, can I talk to you? Yeah. And so antiretrovirals we could deliver through the post office. People come from rural areas every month, they catch 2 taxis to get to Baragwan, they go sit there, they wait there, they spend the night with their aunt, they go back. The economic wastage that is implied because the post office can't deliver some of these things is enormous. You could be able to vote at post offices, you could download education at post offices, you can collect your social grant there, you can service your loan there, you can pay for your insurance policies, you can do all of those things. If we get it right, post office can solve the informal economy. Okay, we've talked about we've talked about more regular audit interventions. It's going to be very difficult to get to month to month, but you know, you can't spend most of your life marking the exam. You've got to write the exam a bit as well, but I'll take your point. The strategic vacancies have taken time. Part of that's my fault. I really wanted to understand what I was doing before I just complied with anything. You know, I don't sign anything I don't understand. And we don't do anything that we haven't thought about properly, but expect those to catch up. Where are we in the turnaround? We're about 3 or 4 months behind where I'd hope we'd be in terms of the long-term strategy. I still think that in 3 years we'll be financially independent to the point that we can raise our own capital. We can issue bonds. There used to be post office bonds, remember? I want those back. And then, we'll talk about that. The revenue targets, you know, everyone's talked about them and we're behind. I mean, 6 weeks ago, maybe this morning, remind me, we declared a state of emergency on Earth in the Bosnians. And, you know, we've cut it down to daily targets now. What do we need more every day? It's 10 million a day that we need to catch up from what we've lost. And every single human being in that organization focuses on revenue now. And if I had more time, which I'm going to make more, I'm going to focus on it. Because the CEO should be your salesman. You know, that's his, I think, his main job. Go out there, sell, get new clients, and do all of that. So we've caught up with the backlog of it. What's causing the change? There are a few principles. The first one is truth. We only tell the truth to each other in the post office. So we don't pretend things, and we don't lie to labor, and they don't lie to us, I don't think, anymore. And we don't create, we just talk straight. That's the first thing. The second thing is that we listen a bit more than we used to. Because some people, that we've got vast experience in the post office. People have been there 20, 30, 40 years. They actually do understand what's going on, even if they didn't go to Harvard Business School and they can't describe it in the right way, they know what's happening. So we know what to do at the post office. I mean, the biggest change is getting people to believe that you're not in a declining organization. When you think you die, there's little point in going out to do exercise. Okay, you can't see the point of working hard if there's nothing in the future. So people actually started working slower and slower and slower, and eventually that became normal. If you work slowly enough, doing nothing can fill your whole day. So the post office today works only till about 10, 11 o'clock. That's where we are. And we need to convince people that actually to work all day is also quite fun. And so it's a bad habit. We've got bad habits. It's a very, very hard to change. And the way we're trying to change them is incrementally. You know, what we can't do, when I arrived there, we looked at the original projections that were there at the time. They were unrealistic and unachievable. You can't have a situation where no matter what you do, you don't look like you're going anywhere. So we're looking at incremental change. So you say to someone, the person sitting next to you, move that letter one day faster this year than they moved it last year. Can you all try and do that? And so it's a very incremental change. A strategy that, just getting people to believe in themselves. The DTT, let me explain that program. Our role is simply limited to the delivery of the desktop, in the set-top boxes, in this digital terrestrial footer. Now, actually, perversely, we're making more money because that project's failing. So, because the rollout is much slower, they have to store the things with us longer. And we don't do that for free anymore. So we're charging them storage. So in fact, there were 1.5 billion of these things were meant to go out. 24,000 of them have gone out. They're sitting in storage here at the post office. We're charging warehousing for that. So in a funny sort of way, as that project fails, we make more money. But it's not a long-term project, and we will get paid in due course. And you know, I think having those boxes close to the proximity. Our total amount that we will get paid for that in due course is 240 million. So it's quite a big sum of money. But the project itself had some major challenges, like having to have a TV license. They've scrapped that now and all of those other things. So it was a failed project, but we benefit from the storage. Let me say, yeah, you talk about some of the things that we would be tempted into if we became a bank. I'm very clear in my mind, and I come from a banking background. The post office has a socio-economic mandate, not just an economic mandate. So we're not in the business of maximizing return on capital only. We're in the business of an appropriate capital equation to support a socio-economic purpose. And so that means, I might just be using big words, that means that if you go to unsecured lending, as an example, unsecured lenders in South Africa raise money at between 15 and 25%. That's the risk that they have to pay for the money that they lend out unsecured. In order to make a profit, they have to lend that money out at about 30%. because half of the loans go bad. That's a very simple sum. If we raise money at the cost of capital to the government, which is 8 to 9%, we can start making loans at 9 to 12%, which means that we can make a reasonable margin. But if someone's borrowing money at 12% or prime plus 2 instead of 30%, they can start building a business with it. And so if you look at things like, for example, spaza shops, you go and examine a spaza shop, just sit and watch it. I have. Those people also haven't been to Harvard, but I can tell you what, they understand working capital management, they understand merchandising, they understand security, they understand location, they understand all of these things. They just don't have purchasing power. So if we were able to start funding organizations like that, if they collaborated at a reasonable cost, they could then start buying in bulk and distributing, getting a wholesale retail margin. So you ask me what the sort of purposes and things are that we have behind the bank. It is to provide capital to the unbanked at a reasonable price. We are government. We're not out there. We've got a government mandate. And as I said to you before, the government's return on that will be taxes and maybe votes even. You never know. CFG, the courier business, I must be honest with you, I tried to diagnose it. It hasn't been a success for 10 years. It's just been a complete manifest failure. We're CFG, we're incorporating it in, divisionalizing it, speed services, we're going to give it a new life. My view at this stage, although it's not cast in stone, is that we will solve this in partnership with some people in the private sector. We can't compete with them. You know, I had a meeting with Ram Logistics 2 days ago. Man, they're a slick operation. But they charge like a wounded buffalo. You pay, but they don't care because they're good. And somewhere between those pieces, I think we're going to find a partnership solution for our courier offering. To do it on our own, we've got too far to go, I think. DocX, funnily enough, in this last quarter, they're above budget again. DocX should have no reason for failure other than confidence by its client base. I mean, that is a bit of protected area.
Yeah.
That is where we have a sort of reserve right. So DocX is fine. I changed the management there as well. I was in a room and everyone that was above this person didn't know what was going, but she did, so I made her the boss. It's a new concept. Now we talk about interest revenue and the loans. I'll talk to the number of questions around that. First of all, in our plans are two further capital injections from National Treasury, 1.3 billion this next year and 1.3 billion the following year of equity capital. Those are not commitments, but those are what were in our presentations to the banks when we secured their loans. Let me say this, that there is no doubt in my mind that the capital structure of the post office is completely incorrect. We should have no borrowings. We should have had all equity injections. Because we are paying 390 million of interest, more or less, this year to the private sector. Now, I used to be in the private sector, but I'm on this side now. You know. Why are we paying that money out from the fiscus? Simply because we're borrowing money. The simple answer to that, government didn't have any money. So they can sign guarantees, but they can't give you cash. So, I mean, that's a broader discussion. So our debt equity, our extent of loans is completely wrong, and we are not able to service those loans and repay them without further capital injections of equity. Fact. If we didn't get the capital injections in this year and next year, 1.35 billion, it would take us till 2021 to repay the loans. And it's just an inappropriate gearing statement. So my view is this. The way we've got the capital is a matter of dictate from the government. They say, we haven't got money, we'll give you guarantees, go borrow the money. That's their choice. They'd only measure me up to that line, because after that it was your choice. And so we have those kinds of discussions. The tender processes, I've talked about, that are a problem. The labor disputes are settled. We've had proper one-on-ones, myself, with all of the leadership there. And the credit is just, it'll never be a zero balance, but it's current. Okay, so it's regular. This thing about communication to staff, we are launching a thing called the Reboot Program. I don't know if you go and look, and you don't have to invent these things. Other people have invented them. Go walk around a Netcare and see the sort of posters that are on the walls about people, about how we keep our hands clean, how we do really basic primal human behavior. So we've got a program that we're about to launch to do this. But one of the So I'll get to that. We talked about this debt. I've talked about it. We need the capital injections. Yeah, the USO, the strategy as far as the social mandate is concerned, we accept the social mandate. We accept that we're going to make losses in the rural areas, but we accept that it's part of our deal. That's part of our mandate. Now, the only question is that in 2010 and 11, the state used to subsidize that shortfall. So they paid the post office specific subsidies for them going into an area which was self-evidently not commercially viable. Then for reasons that escaped me, they stopped paying the subsidies. So we are going to approach government to say, you want us to be there? Pay us the subsidies, we'll be there. Because it's actually a service to the community, it's not a commercial viable situation. So, I mean, that's just a debate. We've been asked, they haven't said they're against it. They've asked us to properly quantify it, and so we'll have that debate. You talked about post offices, Honourable Member. Post offices are a major strategy for us. We've got something close to 2 million unutilised post offices and in the wrong places. So we've got a total of 4 million boxes. About 2 million of those are unutilised, and a lot of them are not paid up. So we have post offices. So some of the thoughts just to share with you. So we're saying, and it goes to the office hours thing, because the new world doesn't have office hours. The new world is here on your cell phone. The new world is 24 hours. So we're starting to think about things like, well, should we take post boxes and put them at garages? Because that's where you go at night when you go to 40 o'clock. Maybe there should be a post box there. Okay. We're just starting to try and think. The challenge in a competitive environment is that you must go to your client. Your client no longer comes to you. And so we've got this amazing pile of non-earning post boxes. One of the problems is the PostNet are using post boxes. It's illegal. They're not allowed to have post boxes. No one is allowed to have post boxes. So the next time you see a PostNet in the post office, you know, you must maybe just help them there. Anyway, they're not allowed to have it, so we're gonna take them to court. This whole question of payment for the post boxes is a big issue. So post boxes, where people didn't feel they were getting the right service, they stopped paying. And so we lock the box. Well, we've got a strategy which says, we're going to unlock all the boxes. Come and pay. If you've got 3 months to pay, if you haven't paid, we're going to lock your box. You'll never get a box again. But we're going to let you off a bit of an amnesty thing because we want them back. So we've got strategies like that. We say, part of it was our fault. We didn't notify you. We didn't believe the service anymore. But come back, come. We're going to. So the post boxes, let me tell you, there's a 700 million rand revenue opportunity there if we get it all right. So if we get it half right, that's a lot of money. So that's a big deal for us. The motor vehicle license procedures, you should be able to do them all at the right place. We should have all the materials. We've got paper now. So it must be fine. When you talk about house deliveries, and it might be area specific. And please, if you give me the area, I will look into it. And I mean that. So my email address is mark.barnes@postoffice.co.za. Send me an email. Tell me where the problem is. You will get a response. TV licenses, all of these things will be, the SABC I mustn't comment on, we need to work with them better. I don't know. Someone raised the question of a publicity campaign. I think it's a big wake-up call for me. You're right. We've done nothing about telling anyone that we're any good. One's got to be very careful about overstating how good you are before you are good, but it's overdue. We need to say something. We're going to take that on. We're going to think about a publicity campaign. We're going to think about that, because the whole confidence building thing is a two-way street, and we've got some good stories to tell. I think I've talked about DTT. The timing on Postbank is just a regulatory thing. So we get the Section 13 approval. They give you 3 pages of conditions that you have to comply with. You have to have this risk management system, that creditor system, that that sort of IT qualifications, those risk management capabilities. It's just a list of compliance things. It can't take longer than 9 months from now. So it has to be, the law says that the Reserve Bank has to rule within a year of providing the Section 13, which was, so it's about 9 more months to go. And I don't expect us to be fully operational before June next year in the bank as a fully, if everything goes well. Now, there are alternatives. Maybe we could talk about deals with other banks. Maybe we could. So I don't want to be into any of those discussions, but they are underway. We don't do labor brokers. So that's it. The total number of post offices, rounding, is about 1,600 post offices fully fledged, and about 700 agencies. One of the challenges is the agency people, when we didn't have supplies and things were battling, so we were losing about 7 agencies a month. Those people also started to think about whether they can come back. And part of it was to do with closures. The closures were because we hadn't paid the rent. And so we didn't have money. So when I got there, I think we had something like 700 post offices that were behind in their rentals. We've caught most of them up. There was talk about 221 post offices that have been closed. Actually, there's only been 22 that have been finally closed, and I think 34 are still under dispute. My numbers are a bit vague. I have no strategy that includes closing post offices. And I've got no strategy at the moment which includes selling properties that are excess to us. Because although we had budgeted for 200 million of sales of properties, I don't think we'll get there. We've sold about 40 million rand of the properties. But you've got to relook at properties in the context of who you will be, not who you are. So we think we're underutilizing areas, then we sell this piece of property, you'll never buy that. If you go and look at Galt Bay, for example, there's a beautiful building there where there's some people trading artifacts. That used to be ours. It used to be a post office. If you go and look at our beautiful building in Church Square, that's ours. It's empty. So we see physical assets as part of our differentiating competence in a technology world. You can order anything you like in the ether, but someone's got to deliver it to you physically. So we see our physical asset base as very important. I don't anticipate... There's no strategy to close branches or move branches. If anything, there's a strategy to expand. So the only closures that we've dealt with are where we've been kicked out by the landlord, like Brian. There have been a number that's locked and closed the doors. That should stop now. Chair, honourable members, I think I've addressed most of the questions. I hope so. Thank you.
Just quickly, the issue of property and transport being one of those things that could probably be approaching, for instance, public works and other government entities to offering facilities like reasonable rental prices. Is there anything like that on transport? Although I don't know to what extent your partnership with Transnet would be taking away business from yourself. So